del movimiento chicano.
It's one thing to love public radio, but it's a special thing to support it. Consider this, if you've got a car you don't need anymore, or you've got one that is simply too expensive to repair, arrange to donate it to KPFK. It's easy for you, pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thanks in advance, and here is how to get started. Go to kpfk.org/cars or call 877-573-5288. That is 1-877-KPFK-AUTO. And learn more.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. The time now is 1 p.m.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by my co-host, an attorney specializing in automotive law, a Motor Press Guild member, and the owner of two Mazdas, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Great to be back in the studio with you to talk about cars for a whole hour on The Car Show.
Yay. Also joining us is industry veteran, senior analyst at IC Cars, host of the nationally syndicated radio show, not The Car Show. He will tell us the name of that because I didn't write it in here. And a former sub-editor at Super Street Magazine, Carl Brower. Welcome, Carl.
Hey, thank you, Mark, for adding time to my radio air, my radio voice this week, because I just can't get enough of that. But yeah, the radio show is The Drive with Lauren and Carl is what it's called. Formerly The Drive with Alan Taylor. It's been on the air for over 33 years, but now Alan is too busy raising cows and llamas and doing other things up in Portland, or outside of Portland, up in Oregon. And so now Lauren and I are running the show. So that's the name of the show, and it's fun.
Where can people listen to that show here in Southern California?
It's nationally syndicated. You know, that's an answer I should know the question.
Okay.
To.
You'll have one next week.
I know Buffalo, New York, where Lauren lives. She got it on the local station there, but it's on like 80 stations across the country. So, and you can also find us on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, The Drive Car Show.
I talked over you. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. The Drive Car Show on YouTube. And I think if you just even type in The Drive, if you type in The Drive with Lauren and Carl, you'll start seeing us SEOs finally figuring it out. But certainly The Drive Car Show at YouTube, you can hear and see all our past episodes. We're up to like episode 7 now, I believe, 6 or 7.
Okay. And I forgot your YouTube channel, which is
Carl Brower Cars. Yeah. Not very creative, YouTube. But that's me, Carl Brower Cars.
Well, okay. And what was your name again? Yes. Carl Brower. That's right. All right, marching right ahead, calendar section. Let's dive right into it. Michelle's going to start us off quickly with a quick, meaning like elapsed time quick. What is it, Michelle?
Tomorrow is the finals at In-N-Out Burger Pomona Drag Strip, NHRA finals. All right, what is important about tomorrow? Brittany Force is important about tomorrow. She is retiring. She is the fastest woman. She's held all the speed records. So you can see her tomorrow in Pomona. Go to NHRA.com to get your tickets.
Why is she retiring?
Because she wants to start a family.
Aw, that's what her sister did.
That's
right. She retired. She did very well, and then yes. She retired.
Yes, and of course, John Force is also retiring, too, because he just got into one too many accidents, he said, and his doctors were telling him, you really can't risk another accident.
So how old is he? Isn't he like 80 or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he retired a little older than the daughters, but that's okay.
Yeah. He had a full, had a 45-year career, I believe.
He started out with a Ford Probe, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Good for them. Well, good for the Force family.
There, yes. The Force family will be there tomorrow in Pomona.
All right. On the other end of performance, we have got Bob Hall Tells All, the inventor of the Mazda Miata, one of several fathers of the Mazda Miata. Bob Hall, former Motor Trend staff member. He and his brother Jim were both on Motor Trend at the same time way back when, might have been the 70s. He had several jobs in the industry and wound up at Mazda and convinced the powers that be that they should make a little roadster called the Miata. And they did it. It's really cool. It is free to attend on Sunday, November 16th. You go to 409 Woodbury Road in Altadena from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And it's a vintage car event. It's not just cars. It's going to be art, toys, music, fashion, collectibles, games, food, tattoos, and a barber. One of those will be something you will want to do. But most of all, you will want to hear Bob Hall tell all. So that should be fun. You can find them on, I think, Instagram at Altadena Cars and Coffee. They are there. That is fun. But after that, Michelle, what do we have going out in Vegas?
Mm-hmm. We have Formula One, and they are back. They're still selling tickets. You can still get a nice package if you'd like. I just saw Fountain Blue is advertising on Facebook for packages if you want to stay at Fountain Blue, which is at the north end of the strip.
Fontainebleau.
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 And it's the newest hotel in Vegas, and it's very nice. I have been there.
And, I have stayed there.
Yes. You agree? Good. Yes. And so you can stay at the Fontainebleau, or you can stay at some of the other hotels. But if you're interested, it's in 2 weeks in Vegas. So get on it and get your tickets.
Yeah. And did any of us ever go to that particular Formula One race?
Nope.
Nope.
It never worked out because I would end up being in Vegas like in late October, early November, and then I didn't want to go back, you know, for the race. So
you go there for SEMA, you go for CES, go for a couple of other car things.
Now the Wynn Concours, there's stuff going on all over the October, early November in Vegas.
Right, because the weather's
Carl, you were at the Wynn Concours, right?
I was there, and it was the fourth year. That thing is getting bigger every year. I think it's officially caught fire, as you might say, but in a good way. And there's plenty of people showing up. Like I interviewed McKeel Haggerty. He runs Haggerty Insurance and all that. They do one or two car events. Yeah, good guy. And just saw a lot of who's who at the various events. And there were 300 plus Lamborghinis, and there were 70 Bugattis. Yes, 70 Bugattis in one place. I'm pretty sure it was the largest collection of Bugattis in like the modern era since, you know, the last time that brand existed, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, 80 years ago. So it was impressive. I was impressed by the scale and the level of people that showed up and the level of cars that showed up.
Did they do the thing where they all cruised down the strip at once?
They did. They closed the strip and had a parade. And I was fortunate enough to ride in a Bugatti Veyron with Frank Heil.
Not just any Bugatti Veyron.
Yes, yes. Frank Heil drove me. He's the head of design for Bugatti. And he drove me in Arnold Schwarzenegger's original Veyron. Arnold does not own it any longer. Arnold was not in the area to be seen. But his Bugatti Veyron was there. And I was sitting in it next to Frank with the top down. And it was quite fun.
That is cool. That is cool. I would, I got to go one of these years to that. It sounds like it's getting better and better. When it started, it wasn't really clear what was going to happen with it. And it seems to be have the right people running it. And so good. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Report. When McKeel Haggerty's there, you know, it's like, okay, this is a real event now.
Was Soon Haggerty there?
She was there, and they were standing next to his 33 Duesenberg that he had entered into the Concours. It was quite beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. Lovely family. Okay. Back here in Southern California, the Lions Automobilia Foundation is proud to present the inaugural Lions Automotive Art and Design Experience. They are calling it a celebration of creativity, craftsmanship, and car culture that is taking place at the Lions Automobilia Foundation on Saturday, November 22nd from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And they're going to bring a whole bunch of different people there. Let's see. Who do we have? We have Bill Patterson, the motorsports artist, Ed Justice Jr. That's right. Justice Brothers. Okay, they make a product called JB80 because it's twice as good as WD-40.
Oh, boy.
No, it's true. It's true. Not making that up. Fireball Tim Lawrence, who made all kinds of movie cars and cannot tell you exactly which ones were his because, I don't know, they signed those NDAs or something. Hot Rod Von Valdez will be there. Even our old buddy Dave Merrick, who was head of, or might still be head of Acura Design forever. He and all of them will be there Saturday, November 22nd from 4 to 8 p.m. at Lions Automobilia Foundation. That address, 2790 East Del Amo Boulevard in Rancho Dominguez, California. Tickets are available now at lionsautomobilia.org. Lots of fun. And back down in the OC, we have something coming up, and we have a specialist in this particular mark. It is Michelle, our own Michelle Spencer.
Right. On the same day, though, is the Lions Automobilia Foundation event. Saturday, November 22nd is Seven Stock, and I believe this is the 27th year. I've been going since 2009. There were a few years.
What brand are they celebrate at Seven?
Sorry. Seven Stock is the celebration of the rotary vehicle and does not have to be all Mazdas, by the way, because there are some others that put some Wankels into production before Mazda got hold of the patent and fixed it up and put them on, NSU.
There's some Suzuki motorcycles with them.
Yes. Too. Absolutely. Yep. So we do get those who show up with those sort of rogue Wankels. And it's great. It's really a fun thing. It's a celebration of the rotaries and doesn't have to be in a car. So you can get sometimes there's people who show up with things like lawnmowers. So, okay.
Rotary lawnmowers?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. If you can retrofit, you could take one of those Suzuki engines off and put it in something if you like. Yeah. So anywho, it's an all day celebration. And if you would like to show your vehicle or your item, you can, you have to go to the Instagram page for Seven Stock. So there's no website. Just go to the Instagram page for Seven Stock and that'll link you to the registration page. So this year's event is going to be held for the very first time at a new location, 5305 Santiago Canyon Road. And it's going to be next to Irvine Lake, right off the 241. And it starts, I mean, I have to get there early. I have to get there like 8. And it's all day. And hopefully we get good weather. And there are some trophies. It's very low key on the trophies. It's like you'll just come back to your car and there'll be a trophy on your dash. And
is there a group of enthusiasts called the Wankel Wankers?
Oh, you know, I need to make some t-shirts for that.
I think we could get rich. Another get rich quick scheme. We will donate all the profits here to KPFK.
Yeah. Which
you should be doing anyway. We should all be doing that. All right. Thank you, Michelle. We're going back up to the Peterson. Our buddies at the Peterson Museum are combining efforts with O'Gara Coach for Sunset GT Toy Drive on December 6th. O'Gara Coach had started out the Sunset GT actually up on Sunset Boulevard. And that was just before that. I think they got a couple of them in before COVID hit and shut everything down. Then they kind of went away. They are back now. They always have the coolest supercars, hypercars, things you just can't believe actually showed up. And I'm hoping they say that they're going to curate this particular event at the Peterson. So often of late at the Peterson, they just take the first 400 cars where the check cleared and they don't care what they are. This time they listen to us here at the car show and they are curating, or maybe O'Gara Coach is curating what cars get in there. So you can hope that there will be a pretty cool collection of supercars and hypercars and who knows what else. You can apply to show your car there yourself for a fee. And if they accept you, you will get one museum admission. So you have your $2 million Pagani, whatever, and you get a free museum entry.
Oh, wow.
If you're just a spectator, you get in free. right?
Wait.
No, it says you don't. No, it says spectators are free to see the car show, but they don't get a free museum admission. You have to pay.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. I must clarify that.
So. I was thinking the math didn't quite add up. So, okay.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, parking is not included. So if you park in that structure, you got to pay, I think it's like $18 or something. But, you know, it goes to the Peterson Museum. So that's it. 401, 501 C3 or something. So it begins at 9 a.m. and they're calling it a high octane event. They couldn't say that unless it was true. High octane event. So that's O'Gara Coach Sunset GT Toy Drive, December 6th at the Peterson Museum, starting at 9 o'clock. Bring a toy, support local children and families during the holiday season. Guests are encouraged to bring an unwrapped toy to help spread joy and make a difference in our community. I am wiping a tear from the corner of my eye as I read that. But who wants to go to Italy here for the next one?
Well,
ooh, I love Italy.
Did I add this one?
No, I did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I did after we had the Pro Italia guys on the show last week because they mentioned that the first Saturday of every month is Taco Day. So I just threw it in here.
Excellent.
And this Pro Italia is at 3319 North Verdugo in Glendale. And I don't know what the hours were, but you've gone to it, right, Mark?
Yeah, I think let's just say get there at 9 o'clock and everything will be fine. That showroom is like a museum of contemporary Italian superbikes. It's just amazing. And unlike Peterson, it is free. You can walk right in. They might try and sell you a Ducati or something, but you may just wind up buying one because those things are just beautiful.
And what does Taco Day mean? Free tacos or what are there too? Mm-hmm.
Free taco. Oh. Free tacos. And the people there are all really friendly. I you know, I'm not really outgoing. And everybody, I had a great time talking to all kinds of people. So, you know, get off the couch, get out of the garage and go show up. I snuck in with my Suzuki SV650, which looks like a Ducati Monster. Nobody any the wiser.
You know, you should have just taken a piece of painter's tape and wrote Ducati and they stuck that over the.
Next time I will.
Next time do that. I think you'll fool a few people.
Ducatis and free tacos. That's free Ducati viewing and free Ducati and free tacos. I don't know how you beat on a Saturday morning that.
You cannot.
You absolutely cannot. So that's December 6th, folks.
Mm-hmm. December 6th. Yep. And it's up in. We'll get you the address.
Like I already said it, but it's 3319 North Verdugo.
Yep. Thank you. Glendale. Thank you, Michelle, saving us once again. Okay. And we are lucky this week. We have a special guest. All guests are special. And he has got some really cool, interesting stuff coming up. If you've ever heard of K1 Speed, that place is taking over the earth. There are something like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus 3 is 9. Let's round it off to 10 tracks in Southern California, K1 Speed. We are welcoming K1's own Tom Abbott. Welcome to the car show, Tom Abbott.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me on. Slight correction. Actually, no. We'll just expand on the amount, but it's 17 total in California.
Southern California.
Oh, okay. See? Never mind. To expand on what you said, I guess. And yeah, now we are either open or in construction / the planning phases in 32 states and 10 countries. Yeah.
Wow. And there's over 100, did you say worldwide?
Yeah. 107 now. Yeah.
Whew. What is the appeal? Why are these things so popular?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are typically the introduction into the world of racing for a lot of kids. We also have leagues for adults too. So if you like the competitive aspect of racing and you know, in an accessible environment, indoor go-karting is going to be it. They're also electric. So there's no noxious fumes throughout the facilities and you feel that instant torque, which is pretty great when you're about 2 inches off the ground, I would say. Yeah.
These are not just, Carl and I and Michelle, when we grew up, We would go to a go-karting facility and who knows who built those. There's some guy in a shipping container welding together some lead pipe. And that was what we had. But these are Italian racing carts, right?
Yeah. So we call them the Super Leggero is what the current model is, but it's through a brand called OTL, which is the manufacturer. And then also there's a company called Kart One, who is the sole distributor of the OTL machines. And yeah, we work very closely with them.
Okay.
Come a long way from lawnmowers mounted on pieces of wood, lawnmower engines on pieces of wood. So that's pretty awesome.
It's a long and winding road, and you could take the apexes just perfectly in your OTL race card at K1 Speed. Now, you guys have the reason that we have you on here, apart from your wealth of knowledge about karting and Southern California, is you guys have a new facility, right? Tell us about
that. Yeah. So super exciting. Just opened on October 24th, K1 Speed Culver City. So it's going to be our third, it is our third location. I'm so used to saying it will be, but it is our third location, in Los Angeles. And the great thing about it, it is the first fully indoor elevated go-karting track in Southern California. There's some that are outside, but you know, it's about to rain, you know, so we're going to be your option, for go-karting. And I know, Mark, you got the chance to go out and try it, last week or a couple of weeks ago now. But yeah, I'm sure you felt the exhilaration of, you
know, I set the lap record for my age group. People 112 years or older. So, I had a fun time. Now, what is the elevation difference between, cause you have one ramp that goes up to the upper deck and then another ramp that goes down. And then both levels fill this whole huge building there in Culver City. What's the elevation change there? Do you happen to have that?
The elevation change, not in front of me, but eyeballing it, it's probably like 20 feet.
All right. Let's go.
What's cool about it is the length of the track, because it is that dual level, so to speak. It's actually 1200 feet. And so it is one of our longer tracks in Southern California. And yeah, it's great for parties. We have LED lights, all throughout or on the, bumpers, I guess you could call them, or barriers. But we do this thing called glow karting on Fridays. So we turn off the lights, let people, you know, kind of have a new experience, right? You know the track maybe after a while, but I'm sure you've never done it when glowing in the dark, so to speak. Yeah,
that sounds like fun. I did one session. How many laps do you get in a session?
12
laps. It seemed like a lot more than that. I don't know. Maybe I should start getting in shape or something, but I did my 12 laps, and I was out there with guys who had their own helmets, guys who had their own Nomex gloves, and some guys had that thing you wear around your rib cage, you know, if you're in a cart that has a vibrating internal combustion engine. These guys were really serious, and I didn't really realize the level of seriousness. I think they were probably from the racing league, because you guys have racing leagues too out there, right?
Yeah, good pickup, Mark. We have racing leagues called Challenge GP, so Challenge Grand Prix. And we have leagues for juniors, for teens, and adults. And those leagues are going to be obviously the more competitive, you know, racers or guests, you know, but it is true racing. That is wheel to wheel, you know, bumper to bumper racing. So, you know, arrive and drive racing is great as an introduction. And then we really like to, you know, give this as almost like a rung up on the ladder, so to speak. And then, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself with the kind of path that we're trying to build, right, for aspiring racers. But yeah, the indoor leagues, the Challenge GP leagues, have a world championship every year that combines competitors from all 107 locations. And so that prize pool is also the largest single event prize pool in all of competitive karting at $79,000 up for grabs. We have a very cool sponsorship this year, actually, for our junior and teen Challenge GP leagues. They are powered by Segway this year, which is a very cool collaboration. They're a very big name in the electromobility field. I believe the terminology is electromicromobility. I digress.
Can you take your Segway out on a K1 track? That'd be fun.
So I would, if you're part of the social team, yeah, sure. You know, we've filmed some promos with it, yeah. But it's a great intro for, you know, if you want to keep karting at home. You know what I mean? Gas karts, very expensive, very expensive. This, not as much. And so it can be, you know, the way to take that racing adrenaline, so to speak, away from or home from day one.
If you're in a racing league, you don't get to pick your kart, right? It's just whatever they assign you to.
Yeah. So as a rental, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Right, totally. I don't know. I don't want to cut you off, but you're the mark. I don't know.
Don't you forget it.
I won't.
There are a lot of marks out there, turns out. Anyway, it's so easy to get sidetracked on this show. I think
you're on whether it's a rental or you jump into the car that they give you.
The voice.
Thank you, Michelle. Yeah. So it's a lottery system. We are a rental karting place, right? And so with rental karts, in gas karting, you have the ability to, you know, kind of tweak the chassis or whatever and make these small adjustments. It is a lottery system, just so that we make it an even playing field as possible.
How do you pass anybody? Because that track I was on, how long, you told me how long that was. How long is that track and how do you pass anybody on that?
Yeah, it's 1,200 feet. It is difficult, especially if you're racing with, you know, good competitors. That's going to be a very hard track to get around people, just because, you know, outside moves become very difficult on a indoor track, I would say. For more competitive racing, that is why we do have the outdoor locations now, actually two, one in Winchester and Riverside County, Winchester, and then also one in Whiteland, Indiana, which is about, I would say, a 20-minute drive from downtown Indianapolis.
All right. And I've noticed when I did that, when I was on the track, I passed a guy. So I thought, oh, I'm the fastest one here. Turns out I was not. I was like almost the slowest guy there, and I wasn't aware of it. So I wasn't like pulling over to let people by.
Oh, you were lapping traffic.
I was a rolling chicane. I was worse than a chicane. I don't know what you would call it. A blockage. What do you call it? There was no stint available. But I would imagine that would be really difficult in a competitive environment to get any passing done. I mean, people complain about F1 passing at Monaco. It's even tougher at K1 Culver City.
What do you think about in terms of horsepower there with those?
20. Yeah. For the adult carts, yeah. They top out at around 45 with full charge.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, really? So the amount of charge in the cart makes a difference as to the speed?
It depends. There's lithium batteries for them, so they'll keep the charge more. The other models that some of our locations have, we're phasing them out. So we will have the Super Legeros at all of them with that constant charge. And we actually have another battery partnership that is being announced this weekend as well. So that's exciting for us as a company. Yeah.
Is there a kind of battery? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
A different kind of battery then, or just upgrades, or?
Call it an upgrade. Yeah, I call it an efficiency upgrade. We are partners now with a company called Blue Shock Race. They're a Latvian distributor of power units specifically. And they actually have those power units as a supplier for the American E-Kart League, as well as the there's one in Japan too that they supply. So that is going to be for our outdoor electric karts and those. They actually tested it with a Burrell chassis, and it maxed out at 103, I believe. Yeah, which is insane. Yeah. So obviously, it's going to take a while and a lot of practice, you know, before we would feel comfortable just letting someone out there like that.
Definitely volunteer for that. Well, the three of us will be your guinea pig.
We could be crash test dummies for.
Uh huh. We'll literally glad to crash. Do that. And we'll sign 1,000 waivers if that's necessary.
Michelle's a lawyer, because you can read the 1,000.
I can write it for you.
Yeah, she'll draw up the thing that says, wow, you just made it impossible for us to sue anyone, Michelle. What the hell?
No fun of any kind. Okay, how much does this cost, Tom, if somebody wanted to go racing at a K1 speed?
Yeah, so the prices vary depending on the location, but they range anywhere from $25 to $30 per race. And it does become a little cheaper with group sales, group events, I should say. We're a great option for like corporate events, team building even. It's a way to get, you know, kind of everyone in your group engaged in the, and it's just organic conversation that happens, you know, like, oh, you passed me, or oh, you didn't pass me, or you were a moving chicane.
I couldn't pass you because the guy in front of me was going so slow. Yeah. So how many go in a race? I'm just thinking if you wanted to organize a trip out there, you would get X number of your friends and then you would all be in the same race. How many people go in a race?
Yeah, we can do up to 12 at a time on a track. The group sales, or sorry, I should, group events rather, are for groups of 8 people or more. What's really cool about the group events, though, is that we do a grid start. And so we'll you know, get you guys all out on the track rather than like a time trial where you're going for the fastest lap out of the group. These are more of the traditional race style. We have, you know, the little marks on all the tracks and everything for lining up. And it is a way to, you know, be competitive with your friends and overall just have fun. It's a blast.
Sounds like, what do you have a website?
Yeah. Yeah. We have k1speed.com is the website. You can go on there, check out all the locations. There's 107 on that locations page. They're separated by state and then for international country separation. But yeah, it's all there. I actually write a good amount of the blogs that are on there as well. So
good, good. Yeah, well, yeah, he was Tom was a former sports writer, believe it or not. He knows how to write, and that's a rare thing in this day and age. So there are K1 tracks in Torrance, Thousand Oaks, Burbank, Irvine, Anaheim, 3 of them in San Diego, and of course that big mile-long track out in Winchester in Riverside County. So go check them out. Tom, thank you so much for being on the car show with us here, and Tom has promised us all free lap times, so...
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And
all right,
it's great just to hear your banter too.
Yeah, our banter. We're known for our banter. We're going to banter some more. But thank you, Tom. I'm going to unceremoniously kick you off into cyberspace now. Bye.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that was fun. I had fun, but you really have to pay attention. And like anytime you get on a track, whether it's autocrossing or go-karts or anything, you just always go too fast into the corner and then you just plow and you plow and plow and plow and then it catches and then you keep going. You think, next corner, I'm going to do it right. But no, you understeer through it. So that's what I was doing. So it's instructive and a lot of fun. And I don't know, it sounds reasonably priced for bachelorette parties and whatever else.
Mm-hmm. So. We did it for our sorority, actually. When I lived in San Diego, there was a similar type of track in San Diego. Uh-huh. And we did a sorority event there. It was very fun.
That sounds like fun. Mm-hmm.
I remember a long time ago, Mark, you probably went to one of these. Didn't Honda used to do like a journalist thing? Or maybe was it Nissan?
Yeah, they had that go-kart track right next to the 405 freeway.
Right near the 110 and 405.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun. In fact, one time... Many, many years ago, I took on the head of Toyota in a go-kart showdown, and he had, I'm not kidding, a total cheater kart. He had like twice the horsepower and these big slicks and everything. And I'm like, what the heck? And, you know, he brought out a bunch of his minions to cheer for him. It was great.
He had cheerleaders.
Joel, just about. They might as well. They wanted people who wanted to
put him into the wall, didn't you, Mark?
I held him off for, it was like 20 laps, and I held him off for like 17 laps. He couldn't get around me. So anyway, all right, let's move on. Speaking of great shows and things, Carl and I were both out in Las Vegas at the SEMA show, and we both had our usual great time. Carl, did you see anything? I know that you're, you know, part businessman, so you were actually doing SEMA like things. You weren't just hanging out like I was, but did you see something cool?
I saw them unveil that Meguiar's like Ferrari thing. Did you see that? There's just like some kind of crazy Ferrari that no. I think it was like race. It was a race spec Ferrari. I should have looked it up before the show, but I watched them unveil it because we happened to be right there and it was like, well, we should be doing this, but they're about to unveil something. So just hang tight. So we waited for 5 minutes and watched them, and it was a cool looking car, big wing. And it was related to McGuire's. So McGuire's was doing something with a Ferrari that looked pretty serious for speed. And, you know, Barry McGuire was there. I got to talk to him a little bit. So he's a longstanding car guy, as we all know. But for, yeah, the most part, I was running around. I'm trying to think. I guess I didn't really see. Yeah, I was mostly just running around. But there was a lot going on. And I knew a lot of people that were there. And I was watching their Instagrams. And it was SEMA, Mark. A constant stream of, like, modified, crazy-looking cars from every corner of the universe in one location.
It is much bigger than it was when I think I started going like more than 30 years ago. And it's amazing that I'm still alive and talking coherently, somewhat coherently. It started out, there was the North Hall, Central Hall, and South Hall. That's at the point that I went in. The whole thing started, I think, in 1967. First one was at Dodger Stadium, of all places. But it's grown and grown and grown. And now this year they've built this whole new West Hall, which is this huge exhibition space. And then all the parking lots on the west and south of the convention center are all taken over. There was like a continuously running smoky tire burnout contest out there. And I guess what they call the silver lot. And there's just grandstands full of people just cheering. And one guy just, you know, with the front tires line locked and the back tires just, and they're going, so that was going on. There was an autocross course on the south side. I think Optima Batteries sponsored that. There was just all kinds of that stuff in addition to all the cool cars inside. If you want to see some of the cooler cars, go to autoweek.com, because I took pictures of everything I saw that I liked. And so I divided them up into different stories. The cruising cars of like, there's something that looked to me like a 59 Sport Fury, but the readers quickly said, no, that's a 60 Chrysler. I had a list of 17 of really cool supercars there. There was a Pagani, I think it was a Pagani Huayra, wrapped in the Expel body wrap that you could go up and scratch it, and then they would heal the scratch because that's what they do. I got a story about muscle cars. I got sort of like a Dom Toretto Charger there that's purple, which Dom would never go. There are bro dozers, as we call them, the ridiculous jacked up pickup trucks. There's a whole bunch of those and just all kinds of really cool stuff. I thought it was fascinating. I don't know if I could have. I've never lasted an entire week out there. You know, I was there on opening day Tuesday and about half the day on Wednesday, and that turned out to be more than enough for me. The SEMA show. So you can go to SEMA.org, SEMA.org, and I'm sure they'll have something. But you can also go to autoweek.com and get my impressions of what I thought was cool. And you've heard Carl's impressions. So there we go.
I remember the I went to the Expel booth, and I did see the very fancy, brightly colored car that you were supposed to scratch. And I just was like, I couldn't. I know Expel is really good, actually, at protecting, but it was like, no, I'm not. I cannot purposely scratch a car, even one that's protected by Expel. I can't, especially a car like that.
Okay. All right. Do we want to talk about the Kia Telluride? Because we all went to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, talk about
what did you guys think? I have an opinion, but let's hear what everybody
Michelle,
else thought.
What did you think, Michelle?
Right. Well, it's supposed to be boxy. They delivered. It's boxy. A lot of people are saying it looks like a Range Rover. And I agree with that assessment. They made an effort to put in some different design elements and the grill. There's that little notch above the wheel wells that's supposed to be consistent with the square design, consistent throughout. And then, of course, even on the interior with this new steering wheel that's got a flattened top and flattened bottom. It's kind of an eggshell shape. Oval with this flat top and flat bottom. Interesting. And then, of course, a whole new interior. Very nice, very nice. And then the designers were very clear on Their new entry into the Telluride lineup is a trim level that's designed to go off-road called the X-Pro. So that was interesting. Yeah, this is new because they didn't have this before with the first gen.
Right. Carl, what did you think of the 2027 Kia Telluride? We got a design. We could look at the design of it inside and out. Carl, what did you think?
Yeah, nobody drove anything, so it's just all visual impression. But I think Kia is aware that that is a very important car for them. I mean, it's doubled its sales in the last like 5 years, from 2020 to 2025, whatever. The sales, annual sales, almost doubled. I'm sure they're making lots of money on each one because I think it's the most expensive car in their model line. And I think it actually kind of outshone the Hyundai Palisade, which is the Hyundai corporate twin of it. And I think Hyundai was a little mad because, ironically, I just drove the Palisade hybrid in Austin on a press trip, and it's got a pretty aggressive redesign visually as well. So I think you have these two Korean car companies that are really one giant company. It's kind of like, you know, Chevrolet versus Oldsmobile or Pontiac.
It's a cabal.
Yes. Yeah. But there's this rivalry within the Hyundai Motor Group between Kia and Hyundai. And it's fun to watch them battle it out with design aggressiveness.
I was kind of, I don't know, disappointed, because when the Telluride came out, I was really impressed with that. You know, how many years ago was that? 4, 5, 6 years ago?
2020, I think, model year. Yeah.
Yeah, they were able to take a big SUV and make it attractive. And I think all they've done with this new one is make it look like a Hyundai. The EV9 kind of came to mind. It just, other people saw Range Rover, and I wasn't really, okay. When the Telluride first came out, I liked it, and I thought they really did something with it. And this one, they just made it into a Hyundai. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to go see more Hyundais tomorrow morning down there. So maybe I'll have something to respond to talk about on the next show. Let's go. Another subject, Archer Aviation has bought the Hawthorne Airport. Now, why are we telling you that on the car show? Because you could look at this, Archer Aviation, what they make. You could look at it as a flying car, or EVTOL, electric vertical takeoff or landing and landing. I don't know. They are going to use the Hawthorne Airport for a base for that. Now, the idea, they have become, I think, the official, they don't say flying car company of the Olympics. They call it something else. And they are going to supposedly be flying people around LA to go to Olympic events by 2028. If that actually happens, I will eat my shoe. Anybody else thoughts?
I just want to make sure you properly season the shoe before you eat it. But no, I think this concept of eVTOL, these kind of mini helicopters that are very easy to fly around and do local transportation, is exciting. It's almost, you know, it's kind of like drone meets private plane. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's kind of like self-driving too. You know, we keep seeing kind of hints and suggestions of it here and there, prototypes, but we haven't seen actual, like, what I would call fully functional use of either of those technologies on any kind of widespread consumer accessible money-making business level. But hey, they've got a goal. There's a date.
Got a goal. I mean, they made fun of the moving sidewalks that we were going to see, right? And oh, that didn't happen either. Okay. Yeah. Michelle.
Jane, stop this crazy thing.
We get that. Michelle, our staff attorney, has been covering NASCAR, this one event of NASCAR, and it just keeps changing. What is the latest, Michelle? Tell us what it is and what's going on.
Right. So Michael Jordan's NASCAR team, 23XI, and Front Row Motorsports, another team, have sued NASCAR, alleging antitrust violations. This was filed in October of 2024. In federal court in North Carolina, where NASCAR is headquartered, and federal court moves fast. The trial is on schedule for December 1st this year. And so there's been a lot of things happening, and I've been checking every single day to see what's going on. There was a crucial ruling at the end of October against NASCAR They had asked for the judge to enter a what we call a summary judgment, and they lost. So there you go. It narrowed down the issues a little bit for trial, but generally judges don't really favor granting summary judgment. And so NASCAR's motion must have not been very good. There was a lot of stuff going on with the motion for summary judgment because they submitted declarations in support of it from people like Joe Gibbs and Rick Hendrick. And turns out they're going to be doing those depositions of those folks, to get ready for the trial. So that's something to look for. You're going to be hearing about those depositions. They've been trying to settle. Settlement has not worked out, but I gotta say, the winds are blowing in favor of the plaintiffs, the two car teams
like
that refused,
teams. Yeah.
Yes, that refused to sign off on the charter that was proposed last year. And they might actually get somewhere on this case. It's looking good for them. I never thought I'd say that, but it is.
So we'll have, we could have some news, after the trial in early December.
Well, if they continue to have threatened depositions, now these guys are not going to want to sit for depositions. They just won't. So it might actually result in another call to have settlement negotiations to avoid doing the depositions.
Okay.
Strategically in litigation, you always do notice depositions of the people that you know the other side is not going to want to have sit down. And it's a chess move. Because it'll get them to settle. It'll get them to talk about settling, whereas before they might not have had any motivation. So they might even file. Sorry, they. Well, they have.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You go ahead. Sorry.
They have to talk about what the market is, and in terms of whether or not NASCAR is able to have these teams go into a competitive league. And we both know there's no way there's another place that these teams could go to be as competitive and make as much money because there's contracts and there's deals. We're talking sponsorships.
What are we going to see? Will there be a change in what we see at the Daytona 500?
No.
Okay. Everybody is Michael Jordan and his two race teams, are they going to appear at the at Daytona or what's might they
as far as.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they are. Yeah.
So this is just a question of how NASCAR organizes the teams that compete or something.
It is. It's all about the business end of it. And there was a ruling early on that allowed them to continue to compete even without a charter.
Yep. So, okay. It's a lot. There's a lot going on there, and we might know more. In what, a couple of weeks?
Hopefully.
4 weeks.
I think they're gonna talk settlement again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think
Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player ever, is now going to trying to be the greatest NASCAR team owner.
There you go.
See what happens.
I'm glad we've got a legal expert. I think we could all get very well lost in this thing, but thankfully Michelle's here to show us the way.
Michelle is here to do that and to keep me from saying anything dumb. Thank you, Michelle.
My pleasure.
Save me from myself.
These are big jobs. These are big jobs.
So now let's segue into there's that word again. Segue. I want to see a segue around that K1 speed.
I know. I want the outcome. I want wheel to wheel, bumper to bumper on segways.
That's so dangerous. Or those one wheel things where you straddle the hub.
We're doing it.
I almost died on one of those when that thing came.
Michelle could draw up the necessary paperwork to protect them. So they'll be like, okay, go for it, guys. You can't sue us according to what you just signed.
You'd have to draw a necessary will. You know, we're a testament. So anyway, we're back into a much safer vehicle. Carl recently got into another electric vehicle back in Denver. Carl, what did you have?
Yeah, you could kind of think of this as a Segway station wagon, I guess. No, I drove the Jeep Wagoneer S when I was in Denver just like a week and a half ago. And it was very bizarre because last time I was in Denver that they gave me a Jeep, they gave me a Wrangler Rubicon. And so that's like go off road as hard and as aggressively as you possibly can. And of course, I'd actually forgotten about this. Thankfully, I had someone with me to remind me that the Wagoneer S is is one of the only non-trail rated Jeeps. You're not supposed to go off road with this all electric Jeep. And I was like, what? Oh, that's pretty weak, you know? So basically it's a Jeep station wagon. I don't think it's out of line to call it that if it's a Jeep that's not supposed to go off road. But, and by the way, there's this idea that there's something coming, the Jeep Recon and all, which is going to be an all electric Jeep that is meant to go off road. So thankfully they're going to correct that with this next one. But the Wagoneer S has been out for a couple of years. It came out as a 2024, very late, like at almost the beginning of 25. And then the 25 came out immediately after. 600 horsepower, 524 pound feet of torque. It gets to 60 miles an hour in 3.4 seconds. And when they first told me they were giving me an all electric Wagoneer S as a loan car when I was going to be back there, I was like, all right. And I'm driving it from the airport and it's like, this thing's fast. Like, it's really fast. And I, you know, again, electric cars that are fast, it's kind of like, you know, yeah. And, you know, when I drop something, it falls downward instead of upward. It's like, of course, they're all fast. I got instant torque. That's what electric motors do. But still, even knowing it was going to be an electric, you know, big Jeep station wagon before I got there, I was not expecting. I'm like shooting through holes in traffic and all on I-70 coming away from the airport. And I'm like, man, these things are fast. So it was fun. I can't deny that I was having fun driving it. And it's got a 100 kilowatt hour battery. It's supposed to be good for 294 miles at a full charge, and it can charge from 20 to 80%. Supposedly in 23 minutes when you find that level 3 fast charger that's working perfectly.
But back in Denver, I assume it was the weather cold, and did that affect your range, or did you notice?
First of all, the weather was almost perfect. Like, it was as good as it can be and all. And it was cool because I went to a Bronco game too, and I was sitting outside in a Bronco game. And when we scheduled it like 6 weeks earlier, I'm like, well, we'll see what I have to wear that night on a November 6th. Anything could be happening in Denver. But it was like 60 degrees out and just a little bit of wind. So the whole time I was in Denver, the weather was very cooperative. And so that made it a non-issue for that all electric Jeep. And of course, things like the Uconnect interface is one of my favorite ones. I think it's very a rational, easy to use, intuitive interface using the Uconnect, touchscreen controls on the big center screen. So, you know, as much as I sometimes am not the biggest fan of electric cars, as the listeners may have noticed, Mark, I came away from this one even being like, can't go off road. Come on. And after like 3 days, and it was like, this thing was kind of fun to drive. I kind of liked it. So,
you go off road. It's not like they have a monitor there.
Well,
but it's
funny
got some ground clearance.
It does. And I was pulling it onto it wasn't off road. It was like this dirt trail area behind a building because it was windy and I didn't want the wind messing with me while I was shooting it. And I found this kind of good place, even lighting. And it was like this kind of, you know, dirt area between two buildings. And I was with one of my industry friends who's known me forever. And he's like, hey, man, you can't take this off road. I'm like, I can't take it. No, it's not trail rated. It's like, what? But it was just like a dirt area. So it wasn't really going off road. But it starts at $72,000 effectively. So, you know, it's a pricey. Well, it seems pricey to me. You know, I think Mark, you and I remember when you could buy new cars for, you know, like $25,000. And so now they're over
$52,000. So. The Colt.
The Dodge and Plymouth Colts.
Cricket. Oh, the Cricket.
Cricket. Oh, my gosh.
Pinto. Those were the days.
Yeah. Yeah.
72K to start. Wow. Would you recommend it?
I mean, if you want a really fast, sleek looking, it's got like crazy, it's most aerodynamic Jeep. You can kind of tell it's kind of cool looking. So if you want a cool looking, extremely fast Jeep badged vehicle that you don't plan on going off road in, and you're willing to, you know, play with the charging infrastructure, you can have an electric Jeep that's pretty fun to drive and just not don't go off road with it.
Where did you charge it?
you're gonna like this. I'll give it to you, do the story quickly. I'm driving around, not even thinking about charging it, and I see one of the Strop Broncos parked at O'Mara Ford on 104th, kind of near where my sister lives. And I'm like, hey, it's one of those Strop things. And I had never seen one up close. I think they have one in the press lead out here. I should probably just go ask to see if I could drive it. But I saw it. I go whipping around and I pull in to look at it. And it's parked right across from a row of chargers that they had at the O'Mara Ford on 104th there in Westminster, Colorado. And I was like, hey, look, there's a way to charge this car. So it's like, well, let's kill a couple birds with one stone. So I plugged it in. I plugged the Jeep into the Ford badged O'Mara Ford level 3 charger. And while I was walking around looking at the Strop Bronco that I could never buy $75,000 and I don't need another car, I don't want to get killed by anyone in the household for buying another car. But while I was looking at it and fantasizing about how much I like that, the Jeep was charging, and that worked out.
Okay. So it was level 3 charge.
Yeah, it was quick. And
is it the
then
Knox
I was
connector?
It, no, it's the, was it the
cheap?
Yeah. It's got
the Chatamo?
Yeah, it was the, I think so. It was the same one that I've seen.
Nissan and Mitsubishi use that, and apparently Jeep.
No, maybe I'm getting that wrong. It's the one that I've seen on other things, like the one that the new Hyundai.
Yeah, CCS probably.
That's it. CCS.
I should sell that. Being a car expert as I am. Okay, good.
But it was nice. The car was good overall. I can't deny it.
Carl was in Denver having a good time in a non-off-roading Jeep. I was out here in Southern California having a good time in a Mazda Miata. Michelle, you will appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Miata Club Sport RF for a week. And, you know, it reminded me, speaking of driving in the snow, although there was no snow in Denver when you were there. So there's no there's no segue there. There's no connection. Okay. The first press car I got when I started at Auto Week back in Detroit was a Mazda in the middle of the winter. And there are a lot of empty roads in Detroit, or there were back then. And a lot of snow and skinny little tires on a rear wheel drive, manual transmission thing. I was just having a blast, man. I was like Ari Vatanen going around all these corners in Detroit and having a blast. And that was actually my first cover story at Auto Week was on the Miata. It was fun. So I have lots of memories of this car. When it came out, what was it, 1989, Carl and Michelle? It was 1989, right? The Miata came out. It was revolutionary. And as we said earlier in the show, you can go hear all about that from Bob Hall at Altadena Cars and Coffee coming up. But it was a total revolution. I remember back in the 70s, my brother had an MGA that he drove around, and my dad had an MGB. And those cars, this car felt as close to those as possible, and it still started all the time. The MGs didn't start all the time. You had to keep rebuilding. I think the MGA, we had to keep removing the head and filing it down, and there's probably some trick to not having to do that, but we didn't know what that trick was at the time. So, you know, we'd pull the thing out and rebuild it all the time and spray paint it different colors going back in. Gold is a really nice color on a black MGA if you put it in there. So anyway, the Miata was just a blast and has remained a blast since 1989. That is 36 years, I think. And, you know, it has evolved over time. The one that I had was a retractable hardtop with these large fairings behind my head. And they kind of they got in the way. They were I really liked the one hand drop top from the original Miata, and I think Michelle, yours is like that too. Your own personal Miata?
No, I have a hard top, and it's a retractable. It goes down with a one touch of a button in 10 seconds.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it is pretty quick. And it does look kind of nice, but I think it looks best with just the cloth retractable hardtop. I've got less than a minute here to wrap this up. It's available in club and grand touring specs. Add in the price of the more complicated roof, and the Mazda MX-5 RF starts at $38,735. More than $4,000 above the equivalent soft top club variant, which I'd recommend anyway. So we're almost out of time here. We want to thank you guys for listening. Michelle, tell us what our website is, our Facebook page.
We are on The Car Show on KPFK 90.7 FM on Facebook. So give us a like and a follow.
Okay, and go look at, just type in Carl Brower and one of his many, he's a media mogul now. He's got an empire. One of those will pop up, and you can hear more Carl on that. You can go to autoweek.com and read my great insights in the auto industry. Stick around here on KPFK for Rhapsody in Black, music that sounds great on your car stereo. And come back next week for more of The Car Show.
Hi, I'm Mark Cofield from Think Outside the Cage. On the air every Sunday at 9 a.m., we discuss current political events, local news, prison reform, and sentencing reform. Also, you're allowed to call in and be a part of the discussion and say what's on your mind. Remember, Think Outside the Cage every Sunday at 9 a.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, or worldwide at kpfk.org.